Members in attendance, Senator Joseph, Senator Hensley, Senator Newling, and Senator Booth Chair. And we are going to take up Senate Bill 285 on the amendments that we had placed in there on Monday. And I want to bring up the changes on 285, yeah. On section, on page six, if you please turn to page six. The language provides that hearings shall be open to the public, and the commission staff, as well as the respondent, may submit written comments to the commission on the hearings officer's decision. That's on page six. The next one is, are there any questions on that one? And then on the preliminary investigations on page five, line 23. Subsections may appear personally, and I want to make that change at the hearing rather than before the commission, at the hearing and testify, et cetera, et cetera. I want to make that change. Is there any problem with that part of it right now? Provides the hearing shall be, I just said that. The cleanup amendment after personally, the phrase before the commission was changed to at the hearing. That's what I meant to say. Any objections to that one right at the moment?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
On subparagraph D, I had a chance to think about this a little more, and I do want to raise a question which perhaps the staff of the commission would respond to. Maybe they were trying to make this point anyway, and I missed it. In the normal, if you take a normal situation like an investigation which is going to go to a grand jury, and you have a number of people who might be conspirators or accomplices, you would perhaps systematically call in people in some kind of sequence, a planned sequence, to try to get to the main offender. What I guess I'm getting at is, does this obligation to advise people interfere with an orderly investigation? I don't mean to ask you. I think you concentrated more about how many notices you have to send out. But leaving that aside, are you going to have a situation where, as investigators, you feel that the obligation means that you're not able to do the proper job in finding out who did what, who the main offender was, if any?
Who are you directing the question to?
Through the chair to Carla Forsythe.
Carla, please. Name identification, please.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, Carla Forsythe, Executive Director, Public Offices Commission. Through the chair, Senator Josephson, the position of the commission is that it would have that effect for a number of reasons. First of all, during the course of an investigation, quite a number of people are named as having done various sorts of things. And right now, staff uses some discretion in looking at those and trying to filter out the ones that are an allegation is made that there was a violation, but it's obviously being made for some motivation that really doesn't relate to a violation of the law. There's a concern that really the investigation to a certain extent is going to get out of control in terms of people thinking that they're under the specter of an investigation when truly they are not, which is inefficient. Now, in my understanding of the intent here is that only those persons who it's thought really have done something that would be very serious conduct would be subject to the advice. So I guess to a certain extent that makes it more efficient. But the position of staff is it's just going to create a problem. The more people that you bring in at this stage, and a suggestion that that came from my staff was rather than using this as the cutoff point, perhaps a way of resolving this would be to provide that a person whose name is mentioned in the staff investigation report, those would be the people who would be the ones most likely to have done something of a more serious nature. And that has been the practice recently of staff, that when related activity that someone else has been involved in comes to the staff's attention, and that does come up in the context of a report, to give a copy of the staff's report to that extra person who isn't the complainant but is a party who may have violated the law, and give them a chance to respond too. So that would be a suggestion from commission staff as to how to make this a more efficient process, more of a clearer line about who we're talking about notifying here.
Excuse me, just one moment in response to that. Tam, could you respond to that, please? Or would you care to at this time?
It seems to me, if I'm understanding the thrust of the conversation, that Senator Josephson may be expressing some concern that evidence might disappear as a result of premature removal.
No,
I don't know if that's the concern.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to go over the matter of whether it's a burden on the staff. And I don't want to go into the matter of whether the recipient of your notice has undue heart palpitations or something. I want to get into the issue of whether if we do this, we're going to have a requirement from the legislature that's going to prevent the investigators from getting the facts. In other words, I'm notified, I should put it that way, one is notified that you've been mentioned, and the person goes out and shreds documents that might otherwise be subpoenaed if you didn't have to give that early notification. That's the kind of thing I'm trying to get to.
Well, Senator, of course, we can only speculate, but I think there would be a tendency for that to occur, plus for people to be unwilling to come forward to the commission with allegations if they know that those allegations are immediately going to go to someone else and the whole thing is going to be played out in that sort of capacity. When so many of these things really are fairly outrageous and allegations that probably won't be supported by anything further on down the line. Yeah, I would agree with what you're suggesting might occur.
Well, excuse me. A person whose name is mentioned in a complaint or identified during an investigation or at a hearing being conducted by the commission and who may have violated a provision, I want to prevent, and I think it's only proper to assume this, that if a deal comes up and a complaint is made, paper, scissors, and rocks, is that what we're talking about? And a complaint is made that whoever is mentioned in that complaint, whether it be the somebody's campaign, and that's where the violation occurred, in the campaign, and that person's name is mentioned, it's obvious that that person is responsible for what happens, indirectly or directly, within the scope of the atmosphere of where these people were operating and under what liability, so to speak. I want that person, before the hearing even starts, even a preliminary investigation, that information is given to them that, hey, your name came up and there's going to be a hearing and you better get your stuff together and you better get in there and you better defend yourself or plead guilty or something, either become a part of the investigation. Because in one sense, you may have violated provision, and you've got probable cause to put that out, and he's mentioned. And all I want him to do is be cleared, boom, before all this stuff happens and he gets involved. You follow me? That's the only reason that I want the thing, I would like to see it happen that way. Let him be accountable to the commission and say, hey, your name was mentioned in this thing. What do you have to say for yourself? He comes in and say, wait a minute. He can give you a reasonable explanation. If you then believe that he had nothing to do with it, and it's a probable cause that he didn't, then you say, well, fine, thank you, and you keep that for the records. But if he is involved in it, you go right straight through with it from that day forth and expose whatever he was doing or clear him when the final judgment's made out. I don't find any problem with that at all. I don't find it that it's going to increase any of your work either. You're just giving that person the opportunity to present his case early enough so that it goes into the hearing, if you will, not after the hearing has been done. That's all I'm saying. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can maybe speak from some experience on point there, you know, wondering whether or not these people, you know, sometimes you have a situation where you have a rather low-level employee of somebody, you know, who, because they are, in fact, an employee, may think that whatever the boss says is a legitimate thing. I'll give an example. We had an organization that, you know, fought a liquor initiative, you know, that had a mail mailing permit, and it was the mail permit was taken, you know, in the name of this certain organization that was going to fight this liquor proposition. Well, so they did that, and that was legitimate. That was a municipal thing, and then we got involved in an activity that involved the APOC, because we were dealing with a municipal issue, a municipal-wide issue on the formation of a borough, at least the formation of a borough. So it was subject to APOC. Well, that same group that was involved in the liquor issue got involved with APOC, and what really was, I mean, got involved with the question of the formation of a borough, and consequently should have filed through APOC, you know, their intentions, because they did a blitz, a region-wide blitz, on a very significant issue, and had quite an impact, you know, without going through the normal processes of saying, you know, who is involved, you know, your name, your address, the group, you know, you know, what you're saying is that those individuals, you know, who had been involved, you know, in this other issue, but still whose mailing permit, et cetera, was being utilized, you know, they would have been named. In fact, they were named. We filed a complaint because if they had been successful, you know, there would have been a major problem for the entire region. And I was concerned because the attitude of the commission seemed to be, well, you know, the vote was a success in terms of the formation of the borough, so consequently we won't worry about it. So it took them over a year, you know, to deal with the matter. Their attitude was, well, since the initiative didn't fail, then it's no big deal. We'll just deal with it, you know, whenever we get time. But the way I look at it, those individual employees of this particular person who was fighting the formation of the borough, I think that they should be notified.
Before it all happens.
Yeah. I think they
should. So I take it then you're in agreement with this particular phraseology.
Yeah, I don't see the downside of that particular provision.
Senator, if I might respond. First of all, through the chair, to Senator Hensley. Senator, I think what you're mentioning is a real concern, and I think the concern is how quickly and how thoroughly can the commission investigate complaints. And I think that's a big problem area. Some of it has to do with staffing. Some of it has to do with procedures. I don't think that this language really addresses that concern, and I think that is a major concern of mine, and something that I intend to devote some attention to seeing what we can do about. And Senator Abood, with regard to your concern, I understand what you're driving at, and I think what it boils down to is I think this language is just too broad. It goes further than what you're trying to do. If I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is there's situations now where it's sort of an indirect complaint against someone. For one reason or another, the real party in interest, the real power behind the throne, so to speak, is the one who is going to be inferentially involved, and it's almost an indirect complaint. And what you're saying is you really can't be sort of in between. You should, if you're going to be someone who's going to be exposed to all that scrutiny, you should have your rights protected too, and there should be some sort of upfront determination whether or not you fall into that category. If
that's the job of the commission or the staff to make a recommendation.
Yeah, and I think the commission would agree with that, but I honestly don't believe that that's what this language accomplishes. I think this language, and I understand we've made significant efforts to try to narrow it. It really goes much further than that, and really does have the possibility of dragging in more people than reasonably need to be drug into this. I mean, we want to focus on... Excuse me, Senator, you go ahead.
No, I know what you're trying to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
I want to focus on the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
if somebody is out there that's mentioned in the complaint to somebody, all you got to do is notify them that your name has been mentioned in a complaint, and here's what you can do. You may respond.
And
that's
so,
all. An innocent person, mm-hmm. or conversely, a guilty person, you don't even know that yet. But I wanted that established. I'd like to see that established before you go to a hearing and the whole ball of wax. Your preliminary investigation will point that out. And in the preliminary, if you say your name has been mentioned and we'd like to hear your side of the story or something like that. But all I'm trying to do right now is prevent the past abuses in it, and that's where a lot of them were. Again, I got a lot of history to go back mm-hmm. through, not only with the whole, everyone has the same problem.
Okay, Senator, if I might, just I understand what you're trying to say, I think. A complaint comes in, X is named as the wrongdoer. But there are allegations involving Y as being part of it, although they're not specifically named. What you would like to see happen, since Y obviously is going to become involved in this whole thing, let's have a determination. Are they in it or aren't they? And let's have that determination up front.
That's right. Preliminary investigation.
If that's your intent, I think you could accomplish that by, and I think part of the problem area here is getting into the investigation part of it, where all sorts of things come up that are going to get weeded out. I don't think the commission would have far less of a concern with limiting it to persons whose name are mentioned in the complaint.
That is your suggestion, then, to limit to people who are naming complaints. See, going back to my earlier concern, mm-hmm. and I've never been a prosecutor, so I don't know how that works, but I assume that a complaint comes in, you may begin an investigation, start talking to people, and it's like a puzzle, and mm-hmm. various wheat and chaff come before you, and you're sorting out, and so forth. And there's the problem I mentioned, the destruction of evidence problem. And then there's also the fact that as you're trying to express, your 50 names may come up as people who might know something about it. I mean, this company has 50 employees, and as I remember, Mary, Helen, Bill, and John all had checking account drawing privileges. Say that's the case. And you have to notify all four of those people. Their names come up, even though you're not interested in them. Is that what you're going to do?
Well, Senator Pratt, yes, but it's not just an administrative burden. It also it increases the tone of the whole investigation with regard to people who may not even be critical to it. Just because of the very nature of these things, the controversy and the sensationalism that even when they're confidential, and it's a matter of grave concern to people. So.
Now, there's another factor here, too, which is that this ties a little bit into confidentiality. I mean, on one hand, you're hearing from the committee that until there's an accusation, the matter should be kept confidential. But on the other hand, mm-hmm. we're directing you to go tell Tom, Jim, Bill, and Harry yes. that your name has come up in a connection with an investigation of Sam Smith. It's going to be pretty hard to keep to attain both objectives, it seems to me. I just mm-hmm. see that as a problem.
Yeah, well, Senator, I agree with you, and if I might say, I think that the commission wouldn't have any problem with what you're trying to do, which it gets back to an argument that I've been making, is you want to make sure that people who really are meant to be parties to these are parties. You can't be a half party. If you're going to have your resources and your reputation subjected to this process, you want your rights, and you want to know whether you're going to be in that posture from the very beginning. That seems something to me that the commission ought to be doing. But this language, I think, does something more than that.
Well, if it's going to protect the guy whose name happened to be mentioned in it, and he never has a chance to come before the commissioner, the staff, or anybody else to explain his position before the hearings, and then the press turns around and makes their own interpretation of it based on some of the things they heard in the committee or with the commission or the staff, if it'll prevent him from getting crucified, that's what I want to do. And I like the language in here, and I want to keep it in there. And I'd like to know whether or not my committee members have any objections to maintaining that. That's my only concern about it.
Mm-hmm.
Chairman, as long as they understand that that's the objective.
That's the objective.
I mean, unless it's going to be misconstrued.
I don't think that it can be misconstrued in there, Senator. I really don't. I think it's pretty well outlined. It seems like a simple thing to accomplish, protect the rights of those mentioned in a complaint that had nothing to do with it.
Well, on balance, I guess I disagree, because I think it'll, I'm not concerned about the administrative work. We talked about that the other day.
Okay, I'd like to go to the first amendment that we made on this. Provides a hearing to open to the public, commission staff, as well as respondent may submit written comments to the commission and agree to officer decision. I believe we're all in agreement on that. May I have a motion?
So I move to approve 4421465 as contained in your amendment of March 9.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The next one is preliminary investigations. Clean up after personally. The phrase before the commission is changed to at the hearing. Any objections? I need a motion, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
I move the adoption of that language.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Page 6, lines 24, 25. The person accused, the phrase accused person has been changed to respondent.
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask consent that we move that amendment.
You. By the way, okay, we weren't even on Section D, were we? No. No, we weren't. Okay. Line 23. Line 23, I need a motion to adopt that. We got to change the word. Oh, we did do that. I'm sorry. Okay. Accused person is a change to respondent. Did you make a motion? Any objections?
Objection.
Hearing none, so off. Order. The next section is this 475, 4421, 475. 475, summary disposition of violations. This section has been rewritten to eliminate the $1,000 cap on fines for violations which are amenable to summary disposition without formal accusation and provide statutory authority for current APOC regulations. Procedure is set out for paying the fines, filing affidavits of mitigation of the amount of fine, filing a notice of defense, commission's appeal hearings. I think we all agreed on that, including the APOC, if I'm not, my memory serves me correctly. Are there any objections to that? May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we amend Section 4421-475.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Section 480, confidentiality. Technical amendment has been added, which provides that confidentiality is in place until the determination of a probable cause has been made by the commission and an accusation is filed or a notice of fine is mailed under AS 412475, summary disposition of violations, unless the person alleged to be in violation requests in writing that the proceedings be public. Any objections to that? Motion, please.
Section.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Carol, what was that? Okay. That completes the 85. We have adopted already in the committee substitute. All I need now is a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hanson?
I'd like to ask one question of the director. Just to refresh my memory, on page 10 we have the publication of reports, and you've got it going. Copies of the, you know, all these reports filed under this chapter will be at the central office, the Office of the Lieutenant Governor, Legislative Reference Library, Legislative Affairs Agency, and the Commission's district offices. Now, where are these district offices?
Where they're established, I guess.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Hensley, this is a problem area. The district offices, we've attempted to use municipal clerks to fulfill that function. There have been problems with that. That's something that we're going to need to work on internally. I think the decision was just to go along with language and existing law and try to come up with some internal recommendations to address that problem.
My interest is that we do have two, at least in Nome, Cosby, and Vera. Those are the three communities in the district where there is a fair amount of interest, seats of boroughs, et cetera, that I think we should consider having this information available in those locations.
Well, as Carlos said, solution to those problems. Okay, we do have an effective immediate date. Yes.
Effective immediate.
It's on there.
No, I've got it. Takes effect immediately. There is a prepared for motion.
I would move the bill.
Motion's been to move the bill to the next committee referral. Are there any objections? Are there any objections? So ordered.
What is the next committee referral?
Your
what's the
international trade?
Oh, wait a minute. I've signed a zero fiscal. Yeah, but I don't know what APOC's going to
do. Yeah, what is this going to go to?
Fiscal notice yet, but we have submitted one. Change around and whatever we've been trying to do, we've got more results out of it now than I guess that you've been bored to this.
You've done a real good job, I think, so far.
We have the last 5 or 6 years. So we appreciate your consideration and your input and your help.
Wait until after the next election.
And we'll take another look at it. 240. I'm sorry, the next. Did you wish to say something?
Oh, no, sir.
Okay, the next one is 241.
I think this is the one Senator Joseph had a lot of questions.
Okay. I haven't yet heard from the governor's office on this. This is his bill. We don't seem to be able to get anybody to come down and work it out, or work out any problems with it except through Carla. And she's doing the best that she can on it. And we will continue to try to do this.
Is this going to be a companion bill with the other bill?
Well, they're both different. They're different bills, but I don't see how you can have one without the other.
241 doesn't go to finance.
What is this, Senator Joseph?
This is an amendment to 241, or the nature of a substitute. It's in the nature of a substitute. It deletes all of
them. Is there any change from the one that I got today, other than this?
Chairman, are we going to make this a working session? Are we going to take testimony?
No, we're going to do a little. We're going to have people talk that's concerned with it.
What I'd like to do.
Okay. What?
No, I was just wondering if we're going to go. I know we started to go through part of it.
What we've done to begin with, the language in sections 1 and 2 were incorporated into 85, and so therefore we could delete them from 241 because of the confidentiality situation. That's what we intend to do. I'd like to have a motion to that effect on that.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Section 1 and Section 2 be deleted from the sponsor substitute 241 that's before us. And considering that that's already been put in the other bill that's passed out previous to this.
Are there any objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
I guess we have to adopt it.
In Section 3, there should be an amendment which defines when a person becomes a candidate. If you'll kindly look at Section 3.
Section 3 dealing with use of contributions?
That's where we are on the first page.
Oh, by a candidate. By a candidate. Present law 1513-100 is really inadequate on this particular matter, since it only states that before filing for office, a person may only make campaign expenditures for, quote, personal travel expenses, opinion surveys, and polls, unquote. Under the present law, a person could accept an enormous amount of contributions and still not file for office. I propose that we use the language in the original 85 on page 6, lines 2 and 3, 2 to 13. I'm sorry.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one way of doing that is in the amendment.
Yes.
We've indicated when a candidate becomes a candidate, when a candidate must file. That's another way of doing it. I mean, we say September 1 of the year before the election, unless you're statewide, it would be September 1.
Well, let's look at 85, because I think that's where we spelled it out for another reason there someplace. So let me get a hold of that again. Where is that, Carol? Oh, here it is. Here, I'll use this. Oh, well, I don't know what the language is then. Okay, the original 85 is right here. And if you look on page 6, lines 2 to 13. Page 6, lines 2 to 13. An individual shall register with the commission on a form prescribed by the commission within 10 days after the individual either 1. Accepts contributions of $1,000 or more in the aggregate for the purposes of seeking elective office, or 2. Files for an elective office. Registration must designate the office in the year the election was campaign was conducted and designate where the election is for state or municipal office. An individual required to register in this section shall include the registration information under et cetera, et cetera. That being the candidate. Now,
what's the present?
Right now, it states that before filing an office, he can accept any kind of contributions before being a candidate, and he can take any kind of money up until that time.
As long as he files a letter of intent. Right?
I don't think you can do it on a letter of intent. You can accept the money, but that's just an intent to file, but it doesn't give you the right to spend any money. Is that correct, Carla?
Senator, and perhaps Brooke Miles can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I believe that under current APOC regulations, the letter of intent basically bumps someone into a candidate status for accepting funds. I believe that is correct.
Okay, the law is actually silent on the letter of intent.
Okay, I guess my concern, Mr. Chairman, is that if we've got someone who's filing a letter of intent, but they haven't formally gone and registered with APOC, and that does occur, I mean, there's several people out there now, I understand, who filed letters of intent with the Attorney General's office. Is that right? I don't know where they even do it. I've never done this procedure. Oh, they do it with the Division of Elections. Okay. But then you don't have any knowledge of them doing that at all. Would this essentially take care of that, or would they still be allowed to do letters of intent?
Yeah,
it's going to
stay there.
Separate.
I can't answer your question. I really don't know. I don't think it's that clear. It is unclear under current law and is an area worth addressing.
So, being it's unclear, let's clear it up. Let's make a candidate or not a candidate. Now, point in case. I know of an individual now who has not filed for office, has not filed a letter of intent for office, yet contributions are coming in to him without solicitation, without anything. They're collecting money. There's many of them like that. Well, okay, so to me, that ought to be kind of cleared up. It ought to be set forth. You can't collect any money. If you do, you got to give it right back if you're not a candidate. Somebody send you some money, you got to say thanks, but no thanks, I'm not a candidate, and send it right back to them. Boy, that's not so in the law. The law is very vague on it. The letter of intent is very vague on it. All we want to do is clear it up. It's my impression that if you're going to accept money for any candidacy, whether it be federal, whether it be state, municipality, or anything else, you're going to file, or you're going to collect money for a public office, an elected office, then you better damn well be a candidate before you accept the money. And if you do not have your candidacy filed for that office, then you must return the money immediately. Period. You can't give it to anybody. You can't do anything but the person that just received it or that gave it. What is your impression of that, Carla?
Well, Senator, to be honest with you, the commission hasn't taken an official position on this because
then
the commission's approach was to try to find the really broad consensual areas.
Okay.
So I'm really not in a position to offer you anything from the commission. I can talk a little bit about the current practice, which is right now you can't expend money, but you can expend money only for those testing the water purposes, but you can't spend money to raise money, which I think many people find confusing.
No, but let's
you
go
can
to
accept money.
Okay, right. You can accept money.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also spend it if you got it for personal travel expenses. What a great way to go on a trip. Maybe as a payoff for something. Now look at that. Person may only make contribution expenditures for personal travel expenses. That's in the law today. Opinion surveys and polls. Now how the hell that ever got in there? Personal travel expenses, I'll never know. Maybe that's to get out there into the field and different areas throughout the state and feel it out and see how he's going to do with the thing before he files. Foot in the water, toe in the water, so to speak. But let's go to the end of that. He decides then he's not going to file. He's got $40,000 sitting in the bank because he let out just enough information where he says, well, I don't know if I'm going to run it out, but I'll take the money. That's fine. What's he going to do with the money? Today's law states he can put it in his pocket. Call it personal income, pays federal income taxes. Or he can give it to charity. Or he can give it to a candidate of his choice. Or he can give it to or, right on down the line. So to prevent that from happening, then we ought to be a candidate. When he's a candidate, he's going to use it for his own candidacy, I would think, including the personal travel, including the opinion surveys and polls and so on and so forth. I think that's an only a fair thing to do. And the language is written, and I'd like to substitute, not substitute, but put that somewhere in this bill on a defining basis. Is that where that would go? Or? Probably a new section of it. Yeah. Probably a new section. What do you think, Carla?
Well, Senator, I was just asking the question if this doesn't, in essence, establish a campaign startup date, at least for some purposes.
Sure it does.
And I have to say that although that's not something that appears in the governor's bill, that's something that the commission has talked about favorably before, but there just seem to be so many practical difficulties with getting some agreement as to when that could be. But I know that the concept of a firm startup date is something that the commission likes.
Well, a firm startup date, if you're a candidate, if you take money, you can accept it if you're a candidate. If you're not a candidate, you can't. But what it also triggers is reporting. Right now, it triggers your reporting status. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think that's good. Everybody else object?
No, I think it's a good point. What you've got here is there's still a limitation here that they would still have to follow the regular APOC regulations or rules regarding the $1,000 campaign limitation, the fact that it has to be listed for travel. In other words, they're going to have to do it eventually. They're going to have to file it eventually. And I think there has been some ambiguity there with people who file for office. They could do this letter of intent, and let's say they aren't out there soliciting that money, but money comes in for them. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm sure there's certain people that have money that comes in just from them saying that they're interested.
I would propose that
I have no
section.
Problem with that.
I'd like a motion on it, if I might.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we go ahead and put in section 15.14.040, registration of candidates. That would include A, B, and C.
Okay, we'll work out that particular new section as far as the description or the definition of a candidate, and I think that covers it pretty well.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I also note that this would still apply if they wanted to go ahead and go that route, but as soon as they reached $1,000, they'd have to go and register.
Anyway.
only problem I could see on that, if someone really wanted to test a gubernatorial campaign, that it wouldn't go very far. But I think they should be up front to say that they're going to do it or not do it.
Okay, and the third one then. Oh, are there any objections to that?
Let me see if I understand what you're proposing to do. I mean, sometimes, you know, people are indecisive. And
that's fine.
It takes a little bit of a... if they use their own funds to travel, of course, that's their business, right? If they're going to check out the Pulse in Sitka or wherever.
That's right.
And so what you're saying is that... when they start receiving contributions to do such and such, then
precisely.
That's when they have to trigger triggers
precisely the contribution. You can contribute to yourself if you're not a candidate, and it's like putting money from one pocket in the other. You do all the travel you want to do, you do anything you want to do.
Maybe we ought to have
but contributions, other contributions.
Okay, but maybe we ought to, you know, for the statewide races. An awfully big state, you know. If you got deep pockets, you can spend your own money. But it seems to me like we ought to be able to go up to a certain limit in their exploratory phase, you know, of contributions. You're still within the confines of, you know. I mean, I think he had to report those, but I think we ought to prior to the time he, you know, becomes an absolute candidate. That way, if I wanted to run statewide, I mean, not everybody has the 10 grand or so it might take to get to a few cities to kind of check out your prospects. You know, I would recommend some upfront limited, you know, sum perhaps that would be a legitimate startup fund.
Opinion?
Yeah, Senator, I certainly don't have a personal opinion, and I would feel more comfortable hearing what your comments are and seeing what you move into the substitute and then getting an official reading from the commission and getting back to you with that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the other thing that's interesting, I think, would be the fact that people have to go over to the Division of Elections at the same time. I know that when I file, I have to do the APOC and the Division of Elections. And I guess my question would be, could they essentially go ahead and test the waters and go and without actually filing for the seat? See what I'm saying? Let's say they wanted to go ahead and file for governor for the state of Alaska, go over and see you, and go through the procedure so that they could do all these things, because they've exceeded the $1,000 limitation, but they haven't filed for that office. Unless there's some kind of a regulation or law that suggests that they have to do it simultaneously. Because there are two places that you have to go before you become a candidate.
Would not this also prevent frivolous filing? Just to get a platform and shoot the mouth off, I'm being just straight out, flat on. Wouldn't that kind of cut that down so you'd only have serious contenders for the job? I don't know, I'm asking. Well, the committee will take that up.
Well, I think this would be a real step forward to be able to go ahead and put this in. And the other thing I think it would do, Mr. Chairman, if I might, but for one other moment, mention something else. It would help the person who is running, that's new at running, not get out on a limb as far as getting out there and doing this letter of intent and then expending money and they don't know what they're doing. And this would require them to go into APOC, get the information, because it's very, very confusing for a new person that's running.
Am I supposed to say something now?
No, I'm just explaining that to Carla.
other one that I have would be to delete the confidentiality provision in SB 241, which is section 4, 1513045. Because we've covered that in the section of the other section. Or not in the other bill.
Yes.
Objections to that motion?
I move it.
Any objections to that? Sure. Now we come to the Carla. All right. Might be easier for you to work up there now.
John, are we going to work through the bill now? Or are we going to go to some amendment?
Well, we want to go to what Carla wanted to bring up on these amendments here. Where's Joseph? I want to. I just feel like.
All right, we're just going to go through it.
Okay, you recall where you were on this bill?
Well, let's see. We're down section 3. Contributions may not be used, taken, or spent as personal income by candidates. That's what we were.
Okay, we need to verify that. There's no what. And we've also, but that's where that came up to define a candidate. And that's what we're still working on. Okay. Let's go to the next section 4. Section 4 has been deleted, so therefore, we'll go over to section 5. 050, amended to read. Now, groups. Each group before making it is what's the problems in here? We've added into this. Each group before making an expenditure on behalf of or in opposition to a candidate, and we've added, and this bill is added, and a political party before making. Each group before making an expenditure on behalf of or in opposition to a candidate and a political party before making a contribution to a candidate shall register with the commission on forms provided by the commission. Explain that.
Senator, my understanding of this provision is that, first of all, it ties in with section 6 of the bill, which restricts contributors to political parties and individuals. And so the language that's being added requires the political parties to register before doing that. And my understanding of the rationale on the other section is to basically have a reporting function for groups that are making independent expenditures, since under the scenario in this bill, groups would not be permitted to make direct contributions to candidates. Senator, I realize this may be a little bit off track. If I could just take 1 minute and just make some general comments about the Commission's approach on this bill. The Commission supported this bill as a clear, straightforward way of addressing some areas where there's some broad consensus. That was the Commission's approach. What are the things that most people seem to be able to agree on? And the two things that struck the Commission as being most likely to have some consensus are the contribution on taking contributions and using them as personal income. The other area was the concept of a closing date, recognizing that there are differing views as to what an appropriate closing date might be. The Commission discussed this and felt that July after the election would be a good balance. It would give adequate time to retire whatever debts there might be, but it would cut it off at a clear point. But the Commission is not wedded to any one particular date. Beyond those two concepts, there are other areas in the bill that were generated by the governor that the commission supports as ideas worth talking about and interesting ideas, but the commission recognizes there's lots of debate on this, and those are the notions of the really restricted uses of surpluses, the language relating to lobbyists' involvement, and the concept of contributions from individuals and parties only. The commission recognized that those were the issues where there was less likely to be some consensus. And, of course, the commission was originally looking at this as a vehicle for the fifth member problem and the confidentiality. So just in summary, those two features, the personal income prohibition and the closing date, are the two things that the commission really wanted to focus on in this bill, recognizing, of course, that other things might come in and go out and would have various impacts. But in terms of being able to provide a position based on real full commission discussion on some of those other points, I'm not able to do that right now, and am here to listen to what you all have to say about this and to take that back to the commission and get their views and get that down to you as efficiently as I can. So, Senator, one question that I have is,
Carla,
excuse me.
On that subject, in the provisions, is it if there's a special interest group that contributes then to the party, like the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, is there any kind of a limitation from the standpoint of the party giving it to the candidate themselves? But yeah. Is there a loophole there that I just don't see?
Well, Senator, there may well be. I really, again, the commission really hasn't debated this through to be on the lookout for those sorts of concerns. That does tie into an idea that really came from the governor primarily.
What kind of animal is a Democratic senatorial campaign committee? Is that a group? Is a subdivision of the party, and so it can raise under present practice. It can raise. It can do anything. My expert says it can raise money. It can. It can raise, since it's a subdivision of a party. It can deposit the money in any account of the party, and the money can be dispersed anywhere the party wants to. Is that correct? Without them.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Senator. That's correct, but I have to say this is an issue that comes up before the commission from time to time because there are two types of subdivisions, the geographical subdivisions and the more functional subdivisions, and it's not clear how those are to be handled. There are different considerations.
This means that the present practice, the so-called limit of $1,000 is meaningless. I mean, you can give $20,000 to the campaign committee or the party, and then that can be, it's not supposed to be directed by you as the giver, I suppose, but that money can be then distributed, correct?
Yeah, Senator, that's my understanding of the practice.
What is this really saying? Let's get down into the nitty gritty of this thing. This bill is saying that only an individual can contribute to a candidate. That no PACs can contribute to a candidate. No unions can contribute to a candidate. So the only people that can, the only things, if you will, that can contribute to a candidate are number one, an individual, and they can contribute up to $1,000. And number two, that political parties may do that. And PACs can also contribute to a political party in the amount of $1,000. Is that right? Or groups or unions for $1,000.
Yeah, Senator, I don't see in here a prohibition on that sort of arrangement.
On what? Yeah. You don't see a prohibition on what?
On the contributions to by PACs and groups to parties. My understanding, and again, I'm not the person who's the best equipped to explain the rationale and the pros and cons here, is to funnel things through the party because of the greater degree of
party centralization. I made a mistake. PACs can contribute anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
Unions can contribute anything they want to the political party. Any kind of PAC can. Any corporation can, so on and so forth. But this bill is saying that only a political party and individuals may contribute up to $1,000 with the exception of the political party, and they can contribute anything to that to the candidates. Is that what this thing is saying?
No, that's correct, Senator.
So, that means that I suppose in my friend's cases, Pat Robertson will decide how we distribute money to Republican candidates. I guess that's what this is all about. And on the Democratic side, Steve Cooper will decide how to do it. That's great, great government. That's the bill. You're persuaded.
Does this also? I haven't really read all of it, but I don't like what I've seen so far. I'm afraid to go any farther.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why I had the amendments I thought the theory of trying to reduce or limit overall expenditures is a good theory, but I still want to have the, you know, groups and meetings, and I have to say corporations participate in the process. I mean, I realize that only individuals vote, and so you can make the argument that only individuals should contribute. But voting is an individual matter, and the political association is a group matter by its nature, and different function, different process. And we ought to recognize that Ms. Forsyth is not the author of this bill, and the commission's not the author of this bill.
That's the problem I'm faced with right now. You are not the author of the bill. And you're not either, and your rewrite of the bill doesn't seem to be an appropriate thing to do at the moment. So therefore, until I hear, and I'm sitting here with the proponents of this bill and the writers of the bill, or the intent people of the bill, but I can't see where I can go any farther with 241.
Senator, if I might respond to that, there are the things that the commission is very specifically interested in, and I am prepared to talk about those. Perhaps those are things that could be considered apart from the rest of this.
The governor's office about his bill, about your amendments, or the commission's amendments?
Senator, I believe that the governor's office has seen that language. Those proposed amendments related pretty specifically to things that involved the commission.
They approved them all?
Well,
I'm real concerned about this, really, because here I'm doing something to the governor's bill. God, I sure don't want to get crossways with him. I've been there before. I don't like that position.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator, there is an amendment that we proposed on the use of contributions. It's personal income to tighten up that language. I did review that with the Department of Law, with Mr. Monkman, and he worked with me on drafting up that language. That is what's happened on that, and I believe that Bob Evans of the governor's office is aware of that. I think that's an accurate statement of the involvement thus far. Some of the others...
Well, let's go through yours.
Okay.
Number one, we've already taken that. I think there's had a change in this bill. Use of contributions.
Senator, that would be a rewording of the draft of the language that appears in this word to tighten it up. And just a little history on this: when I had first discussed this with committee staff, it occurred to both she and I that there it could be drafted in a tighter way to really pin down what we're talking about here. And so this language is just basically a redrafting to tighten it up. To
well, this is the one that we're going to define the Kent women. Mm-hmm. Use of contributions may not be used in or spent. You want to substitute that change in it, right?
That's correct, Senator. And the rationale is it's just a more tightly drafted way of expressing the same concept to make it really clear that contributions can never be used as personal income at any time in the process.
May I have a motion on the first, under use of contributions, may I have a motion to accept that amendment?
I so moved.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered, accepted. How about to take section two? What?
The question is, now that you've acted on it, personal income. Is there a definition of that somewhere?
You know, Senator, I don't believe there is.
Should there be? I mean, is that a legal terminology or what?
I think Senator Hensley has a good point, because I have colleagues I know who have said to me that they're very concerned about they're elected not being able to use campaign funds to communicate with a constituent or fly to a meeting, a political meeting, at their expense. I don't know if that's Senator Hensley's particular concern, but I mean, that's a practice that is carried out, of course, in Washington by Congress, and I don't have any reason to say it's bad to do here.
Well, how do you find personal income?
Now, that's I think it needs to be clarified, because you know, it covers it such a it's an imprecise term, I think.
So if I put $100,000, the governor puts $100,000 as personal income into the campaign as a loan, we'll say, that he can't use it?
No, I
for
that's separate.
I'd like to see.
Can't bring it back as personal income?
Maybe Carol.
That's not fair. It's not clear.
Maybe Carol could find out how to do that in Congress, but give us kind of a guide to that. I don't want to get into the loan business, but just in terms of if you've got $5,000 left over from a campaign and you decide you want to send Christmas cards to your supporters, I think it makes a huge difference. Why not do that?
Senator Fanning?
Yeah, along the same lines, it seems to me that the term is an incorrect term. Personal income is money that you make. It's not money that you spend.
Personal benefit, personal
assets. Assets is what you may receive, and assets are what you spend. But so the terminology, even in the better definition, seems to me it seems contrary to me. It says you can't spend income. Well, of course you can't. All you do with income is you receive it. You spend assets. Mm-hmm. You don't spend income. You receive income.
For personal use. For any personal use.
This almost sounds like we're trying to write the IRS code.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask another question?
Yes, correct.
Just because I apologize for being late, but maybe I don't understand that. Is the process here we're going to go through, if we are going to use this bill as a vehicle and we are going to move it forward and we are going to add all of these amendments or at least discuss them?
That's what we're here for, to figure that out. But you're right as far as the procedure is going to go.
But I understand, and I gather that most of the committee does not like the bill.
That is not been established as yet. There's parts of it that we don't. This is the governor's bill, number one. Sponsor substitute. These are the amendments from APOC.
May I recommend that we have somebody from the governor's office come down and speak on their legislation? I mean, they're proposing to revolutionize the way we do things, and I would like to hear their basic philosophy.
I intended to do that to begin with, but I wanted to give you the courtesy of it, but in that I think we're spinning our wheels here right now without having the governor's office here. I've been in contact with them a dozen times, and a dozen times they keep coming up with some reason why they can't even talk to me about it. So I guess maybe we'll just have to wait until we can get them together, that's all. And that's what I feel about it. That's the way the committee feels.
Well, Senator, I can certainly understand that feeling on the part of the committee. Again, those are two, the personal income concept and the closing date concept seem to me to be things that I can talk about, and certainly the governor's office, I'm sure, would have things to add. And
well, I'd rather have you here and the governor's office here, or his group upstairs, and then we can pull it all together, listen to it all into ours, and come to a conclusion or an agreement or a disagreement. But we all have to be in the same room. This isn't going to work. We can be here forever.
Senator, perhaps this is a last gasp effort here, but I know the commission is very desirable, and I know you are too, Senator. If there's any way that any of the broad issues that some action can take place along those lines, and trying to do something that's realistic, not something, perhaps to take a more incremental approach to this, and to do what can be done, and perhaps some of these larger issues are, and certainly there are things that are meritorious for debate, but if there is a possibility that some discussion and some action could take place on these two things that the commission would really like to see, that I don't feel are things that are, there certainly can be discussion about them, but they're not that controversial. The concepts are fairly understandable. The personal income concern, how precise, are things that the committee can discuss. I can present testimony on that. On the commission's behalf, I would feel badly if those very broad concepts were to be delayed for discussion.
If you recall, going back to 85 now, we gave tremendous considerations to your wants and desires. We put them in there. We were very cooperative. You've been very cooperative with us. Okay. So we're dealing between APOC and the committee. Okay. This time we're dealing between APOC, the big guy upstairs, and the committee. And I feel very uncomfortable because there's been a couple things come up that the commission was in favor of, but the governor was not. They weren't. I got that much out just by it. And I was supposed to have a memo here explaining it, but I didn't even get the memo. So I think in view of the circumstances, I think we're just, we're going to wait until, and I'll put the pressure on it. You'd be surprised how many phone calls I've made trying to get somebody to come down here to this meeting and get this thing out on the table, and it has not happened. Personally, I'm not very happy about it, and I'm going to continue to pursue it because I want this bill to go out. I want it to be put together and put to bed and get out of here. That's what I want. So I'm on your side there.
Well, Senator, just one last remark along these lines. And the Public Offices Commission is really interested in seeing a discussion about the issues as well.
That's
as
right,
about the agency, because the issues should be the issues and having those fully debated and discussed.
I understand, but this is not the APOC's bill. This is the governor's bill.
Yes.
And until I can get all parties concerned, then this is what's going to happen. I'm going to push like for that. That will do it. So I'm going to hold this bill over, and I'm going to put the pressure on again. We'll keep bringing it up until we're all sick of it. I want to take one more bill up, SB 202. This is an act relating to the contents and disclosure statements under the conflict of interest law. Prime sponsor is Senator Josephson. You've got the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the ethics bill was developed, the question came up as to whether an attorney in the legislature should be prohibited from representing a client before a state agency, and the decision was made not to make that prohibition. Then in 1987, I read a newspaper article which said that the same issue had come up in the state of New York, and the New York Bar had proposed special disclosure rules for legislators who were lawyers and who appeared before a New York state agency so that the public would have more information. So I took that information and adopted, for the purpose of 202, the New York approach, recognizing that lawyers in the legislature, like other legislators, are part-time officials and have to make a living, but recognizing that there is a public's right to know involved here. We got hung up in 87 because the former director of the Public Offices Commission, when I asked for her comments, responded that it was improper by law for a legislator who was an attorney to appear before a state agency, and she wrote to me on March 27 to that effect. We got an opinion from Tamara Cook or Tamara Cook's office, which said that was wrong, and I think later everybody agreed that it was a wrong view and that there is no prohibition, and that so that the bill that I introduced is in order to be considered. And so, to make a long story short, if under the present law, an attorney who has a client must list the client on the conflict of interest disclosure form, but you don't know what the subject matter was, and you don't know what the fee was, and you don't know whether there was a state agency involved. If this bill passes, an attorney's conflict of interest statement would be expanded to show that I represented John Jones, for example, before the Division of Mining or before the Public Utilities Commission, and the fee arrangement was such and such. And I think this is a little more satisfactory way of dealing with the problem than the way we've got it now. There's no perfect answer to it.
Do all the attorneys agree with this?
Oh, I don't know if they all agree with it. Nobody's come up to me and said that's awful and it's going to be a nightmare for me.
So it looks like they pretty much agree that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
There's something wrong with it then.
But, Mr. Chairman, wouldn't they have to file some kind of a reference to the fact if it's over $100, anything, is any kind of a fee that's received that's over?
They have to disclose. You list the
never charge them.
You list the people who are sources of income over $100.
Yeah.
But you don't say what it was for.
Only who the payee was.
Only payer was. Yeah. Only who the source. Only the source.
Any other testimony on this bill? Carla.
Senator, the commission did review this legislation at its teleconference on Friday and indicated that it does support this measure as being consistent with the broad disclosure goals of APOC. It appears that there would not be a fiscal impact because the changes to forms would be made as part of our regular cycle, and in terms of effectiveness, it would fall at a very good time for that. The legal opinion is are consistent now that this is the correct reading, and I might just quote from a memo that I believe Mr. Bradley prepared on this, that that he did feel this could be clarified by legislation, this issue of whether the Legislative Ethics Act is a repeal of this provision. And I don't know whether we need specific language to do that or not. It may be clear enough just by the fact that this is on the books now. The only suggestion that I would make, and it's my understanding that there may be a work draft on this, is to be a little clear about what is meant by fee arrangement. And if we could say the type of fee arrangement, because I think the intent is to indicate whether it's a retainer or an hourly basis, and not to actually specify the dollars and cents that were involved and how that was divvied up. That would be helpful. That seems sort of picky, but I know that that's a question that'll come into us, and better to resolve that up front than through questions to the commission.
Senator Joseph, did you have anything, Senator Fanning? Senator Joseph, did you want to make a correction or amendment to that?
There's a CS in his folder. Oh, type of fees. So I would move and ask unanimous consent to adopt the CS.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill's report.
I would move that and ask unanimous consent that the bill be reported with individual recommendations.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. I will also make up a zero fiscal note so that it'll be ready across tomorrow. I'll get that up to rules. It goes to judiciary. And we'll send a zero fiscal note up with that. Anything further come before the committee? We're out of here.
You had your bill, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Joseph and Mr. Ewing, the
bill.
The point was that it.